Okay, and that sound means that we're recording, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the Think Tank for Wednesday, February 3rd. We're pleased to have Bill O'Hanlon with us, who is going to talk about how to get a book published and sold. Now, Bill O'Hanlon has written 29 books. One of them even got on Oprah. When he started out, he was clueless in publishing. That's what it says here, Bill, so don't take offense.
True. No, I don't.
He didn't know the steps to writing a book or how to get a book published. So through the years, he has had countless learning experiences and has finally figured out writing and publishing, and he's here to share his insight. Bill, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. We're going to divide this into two parts, and I'm going to be on another call in the future. But today we're going to talk about getting a book published and sold. There are various elements to writing a book and getting it published, and one is how do you write it, how do you find time to write it, how do you write well, how do you choose your topics, that kind of stuff. And the other aspect is more the commercial aspect. How do you actually sell a book? How do you sell it to, do you need an agent? Do you sell it to a publisher? How do you sell it to a publisher if you're going to sell it to a publisher? And how do you get it together to do all that? So I thought, you know, Tammy and I talked about the topics that she was interested in that she thought might be good for Imago folks. And I know a bunch of you would like to write books and publish books. And I've had some conversations with some Imago folks in the past, and they've had some interest in that. So I thought I'd start with the more, you know, this is doable, this is possible, and here's how to get it published. If you're stuck on the, yeah, but I don't have time to write it, or I don't know how to write it, or I'm not a good writer, we'll get to that at another time. We're going to do a March call on how to write, and then I'm going to actually do an April call on how to get on the workshop circuit. I have some expertise in all those things. But let's just focus this time, because we only have a limited amount of time, on how to get a book published and sold. All right. So first, I guess we should get the broad overview. Why write a book? Spread your knowledge and influence other people. Build a platform that gets you speaking engagements and gets more people to your speaking engagements, and also create some passive income. I had a friend who was a psychologist, and he said, oh, I've written books, you know, for professionals, and it ultimately makes you pennies an hour. You could do better just sticking with your practice. That hasn't been true for me. I've actually made hundreds of dollars an hour writing books, and more than that, once I put in the initial time, I get money for years afterwards. I'm still getting money from books that I wrote in the 80s, and I get a check every 6 months. So it's ultimately been more than pennies per hour for some of the books. For some of the books, it turned out to be pennies an hour. He was right. But if you only had one book and you really got it out there and got it marketed well, you could make some significant money. And we're going to be talking about the kinds of books that you can make money and what kind of money you can make from books. But for me, this actually wasn't how I started writing. I started writing because I was teaching seminars, and I was a therapist. I've been a therapist for over 30 years, but this was early on in my therapy career. And I got very passionate about some ideas, and I had to share them, first through public speaking, and then I was speaking for a while, and people said, where's your book? Oh, no, I can't write. I don't have time to write. I'm not good at it. I'm a little hyper. I don't like to sit down on the keyboard. At the time, it was typewriters. I don't like to sit down at the typewriter and, you know, write these things. It's just too much. I'm not a good writer, and it takes too long, and I can't focus and things like that. But people kept bugging me, and finally, after teaching so many seminars, I had a pretty good worked-out outline for my first book, my first two books, actually. And I sat down, and it was blood on the keyboards at first, but I got a book done, and then I got another book done. And as Kevin said at the beginning, I have 29 books out, and I'm finishing my 30th one. It's due next month. So let's talk about the two kinds of books that people on this call are probably going to write. There's a bunch of kinds of books, but I'm talking about nonfiction books, books that are filled with ideas and facts, not novels or even memoirs, although some of you may want to write a memoir. But, you know, our children's books or things like that. I'm not talking about poetry books. I'm talking about kind of either self-help professional books, how-to books that would be for couples, I assume, because most of you specialize in couple stuff, and or for professionals and teaching them how to do some work that you do. Maybe it's general therapy or maybe it's couples therapy. So those are the two kinds of books that most people on this that are listening to the recording or listening in the, on the call are going to want to do. And one is called Professional. That's for your colleagues in psychotherapy land. And the other is called Trade. It's a jargon word, but that just means a popular book, a book for the general public, ones that you would see in a, you know, in a regular bookstore on the shelves. Now that they have super bookstores, you'd sometimes see a lot of professional books there too, but mostly you'd see books for the general public. There are different pathways to writing these, but they share some things in common. The first thing you have to do is figure out what a good topic for your book is, because you're going to have to both sell it to a publisher or an agent and sell it to the general public. And what I hear when I talk to agents and when I talk to publishers is some people just contact me with nothing unique. They send me a book on, you know, how to enhance couples communication, and there's too many books out about that. It's got to be, you know, and I've proposed some books to my publishers or to my agents, and what I've heard is too generic. It's been done before. This book has been written before. So your first job is to figure out what you're passionate about, what you're expert about, and then figure out either a new slant or some new knowledge that you're going to propose to put out in the world that you think you have a good idea that nobody else has been writing about or that there's a hole in the market here. And there's also another kind of unique slant or new slant, and that is a population that's underserved. So, you know, for a while, I know in Imago, there wasn't much for gay and lesbian couples. You might do a book for couples when one person has a disability, you know, a physical disability of some kind. That would be a slant that maybe other people haven't written about, somehow an underserved population. Or if you happen to be Asian American, you could write Imago for Asian Americans and talk about the variations that sometimes happens in the method because of that. Now, again, you're either slanting it towards therapist types, professionals, or you're going to slant it towards the general public. When you're slanting it towards the general public, the standards are higher because there's a lot of books out there. Psychotherapy only has so many books, but general public books have more, so the bar is going to be a little higher. So I'll talk about what I would call the 5 P's for getting published. And the first one, and it's really essential because, as I was saying before, I wasn't a natural writer. It was sort of blood on the keyboards for me at first. Is you got to have passion for your topic. You got to have excitement, energy. You got to find something that you're willing to sustain through both the conception of the book, the writing of the book, the selling of the book, the writing of the, we'll talk about it in a few minutes, the proposal for the book, you know, dealing with publishers, dealing with agents if you decide to go that direction for a more general public book. And then once the book is done, there's editing. They send it back to you. You have to look at this book. By the time I'm done with the editing process and the selling process for the book, it's usually a year to two since conception of the book, and I don't want to see that book sometimes anymore. I'm so tired of it. I get it back for the second round of editing, and I have to go through the whole thing again, and I'm ready to move on to my next project or something else in my life. And so you have to have a fair amount of passion and energy. The other thing that passion will do is convince somebody, an agent or a publisher or the reading public, that they should read your book, they should buy your book. Your energy is going to communicate itself. If you don't have a lot of energy for it or a lot of passion for it, that will show. You're just trying to write a book to get famous or wealthy, you should probably take antipsychotics if that's your goal. You might become famous or wealthy, but you probably won't. But if you have to write this book, if this is something, that's what happened for me. I just had to write. I had to get my ideas out in the world. And that passion helped kind of push the book through the process, both enroll other people in the idea that it was a good idea to publish this book, as well as communicate that energy all the way down the line through the publishers and the agents and the readers ultimately. The second thing, the second P in the publishing process is platform, and this is more and more important. This is a jargon word in publishing land, and you may have heard of it, but platform means anything that raises you up above, that, like if you had a platform you were standing on, there were 100 potential authors standing in a room, and a publisher or an agent came in, and you were standing on the platform, and they could see you head and shoulders above everyone else. A platform is anything that raises your profile above everyone else's. So that's, you know, why Dr. Phil can publish a book about diets, even though, you know, who knows? Dr. Phil's trained as a psychologist. What does he know about diets? But he can publish about any book. Deepak Chopra can publish about any book because they have a major platform. They're on television. Somebody, you know, that's why Monica Lewinsky, when there was a scandal with President Clinton, could publish a book because she had a big platform. That is, people knew about her. And so platform means several things. One, your credibility. How long have you been doing this thing, whatever you're writing about? How, you know, what are your credentials? Do you have degrees? Have you been trained in this? Have you been training other people? Have you done studies in it? Have you published professionally in journals that are peer-reviewed? Or, you know, are you well-known in your area for this? So it's partly reputation. It's partly credibility, it's partly your degrees, but it's another whole element to platform is your marketing channels and abilities. Those of you who are in private practice know that you really needed to learn a bit about how to market your practice, how to market yourself, if you do seminars at Imago or whatever else, you had to learn something about marketing. Well, it's the same thing is true with books. The bigger your marketing channels, the more people you can let know about your book, and the better your marketing abilities, the more likely it is that somebody's going to buy your book. Now, this is true whether it's a professional book or it's a general public book, a trade book. It's especially true in the trade area. In professional books, they're going to do a lot of the marketing for you, although they'd like some help from you. In trade books, in general public books, they are going to make a decision based on the topic, your passion, how unique and good the topic is, your passion, how well put together your package, your proposal and everything is, but they're going to make a major part of the decision is going to be based on your platform, your ability to get the word out about the book, your willingness to get the word out about the book, the channels that you have about getting the word out about the book, and then generally your reputation. So these days, the good news is you don't have to be Dr. Phil. You could be a blogger who could have 100,000 people reading your blog. And if you had 100,000 people reading your blog, you could do that all for free. It doesn't cost anything to start blogging. You could sell your book very, very easily. There was a woman who some of you may know about, and she was a bored office worker in New York City, and her husband was a techie at the beginning of blogging. And she decided, you know, I'm either going to quit my job, I hate my job, or I've got to find something more interesting to do beyond my job. And she began to cook recipes from Julia Child's Art of French Cooking one an evening for 365 days. She decided she was going to make 365 recipes for 1 year. She was going to make one a night. And she did, and she started writing about it on her blog. And at first, just a couple of friends read it. And then it was so well-written and so interesting, and sometimes she had disasters, and sometimes it turned out well, and she was writing a little about her thoughts and relationships and things like that, that by the end of the year, she had 100,000 people reading her blog, and she got a book contract because one of the people who was reading the blog happened to be a literary agent who thought it was a great idea for a book. And then it turned into, as some of you know, a movie, and she got movie rights, and she's just written another book recently and gotten that published. She did that all from blogging. So these days with internet tools and social media tools, you can get well known without a lot of money. You have to put some time and effort in and learn the tools. But whatever. What happened for me, I'll tell you my story, platform, maybe two stories about platform. The first one was when I went to publish my first book, write my first book, which was a professional book, one for therapists. And I was teaching seminars at the time, and I had also, and I was teaching seminars a couple times a month around the country, and for psychotherapists. And the second thing was I had volunteered. I studied with Milton Erickson, the late psychiatrist, who lived in Arizona. I went to school in Arizona. I met him, and I studied with him. And I was really interested in his work, and that was part of what I was teaching about. And I had volunteered to edit Milton Erickson Foundation newsletter. And I would put my listings in my newsletter. And also, somebody's making some noise in the back. If you just press mute on your phone, that would be really good. Somebody.
How do you mute?
How do you mute? Well,
yeah.
You can. Do you know how? Do you know this, Kevin? Kevin, you're still on there. I can mute you all out, but somebody just muted themselves. I think that's fine. There's usually a mute button on your phone, but there is a code for it here. But I can mute everybody. I just don't know how to mute just one person. So that's better, though. So I was editing this newsletter, and that was getting the word of my workshops out quite a bit. I was teaching a couple of times a month, and I had I went to an American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy conference, yearly conference, and I was speaking there. And one of the editors of one of the publishers contacted me and said, somebody told me that you know the hottest new names in Ericksonian therapy. And, you know, Norton and Bruner Bazell are getting all the good books in Ericksonian stuff, so we want to jump on this. Can I meet with you and just chat with you for a few minutes and pick your brains about who's up and coming? So I knew all the people in this area. I was sort of a central clearinghouse for information. And I told him the four or five up-and-coming people that he should contact and how to get a hold of them. And then I said, well, then there's me. And he said, oh, you have any interest in writing a book? And I said, yeah, I have five books in mind that I'd like to write someday. He said, five books? Tell me about them. And I told him about them, and he said, okay, send me a letter, send me an outline for this one. It's a little more formal process now, but this was in the old days. And I sent him a letter, and he sent me a contract. And I was like, wow, this is, you know, magical. I can't believe it's this easy. I heard it was really hard to get a book published. And what I thought later was, you know, it wasn't so magical. He was just doing the math. I was, you know, so I have a master's degree. I don't have a PhD. So I had a little less credibility than someone with a PhD, but somebody who's at a university teaching, you know, maybe 60 students a semester, I'm seeing 60 students or 60 or 100 students every week, and I'm teaching two or three times a month. And so I can sell a lot more books because I'm out and about. He heard about my workshop schedule, and he was like, great, you can sell books. All they needed to sell in psychotherapy land was 2,000 to 5,000 books to make back their money, both the money that they put into publishing the books and the money that they give you up front, which is called the advance. And so it was a no-brainer for him, because I had a bit of a platform. I had the Erickson Foundation newsletter that I can announce my book in, which went to thousands of people, and I was seeing thousands of people a year. Sometimes I was going to conferences like the AMFT, and I was speaking in front of 400 or 500 people at one of those conferences. Plus, I was going around doing freestanding workshops for 100 people at the time every couple of weeks. So your job between now and when you approach a publisher is to work on your platform. That's going to probably make the biggest difference. If everything else is in place and everything else is equal, if you work on your platform, you will do pretty well. That is, you will be likely to sell your book, and especially a professional book. If you have a relatively good platform and your topic is pretty good and you present it in a good way, and we'll talk about how to do that, you'll probably get it published. It's pretty easy to get a professional book published, relatively easy to get a professional book published. A general public book, that's a little more difficult, and there's more steps to it, and the criteria is a little more stringent. There are a few more things you have to do, and you have to have a bigger platform to do that. But it's still doable. Many people do it. Harville did it, and other people do it, and Harville didn't have a clue how to do it when he started. So I said I'd say five P's. We talked about passion. We talked about platform, which I spent so much time on because it's really, really crucial. And I want to talk about three other aspects to getting your book published, and that is having a clearly defined problem that you're solving for the reader. If it's not a problem that people recognize, then publishers won't be interested in it. It's got to be some problem. So, you know, my colleague and friend with whom I wrote a book years ago, Michelle Wiener Davis, wrote a book called Divorce Busting, and that was about preventing divorce. And this was many years ago when that wasn't such a popular topic. She also wrote a book about the sex-starved marriage. Those are both problems that people are highly motivated for seeking out help. So you know from your work with couples, what are the kinds of problems that really, you know, are the most common problems, but also that you haven't seen a book on the shelf that's solving it really well. So that's where I would start thinking about, okay, well, I have general, you know, knowledge in Imago or in couples therapy or in whatever other area of expertise you decided to write on. But now I need to focus it a little more. I need to focus it down to what problem am I helping people solve, and the next P is what promise is my book making? If they read my book, what benefit will they get out of it? This is what they call it in marketing. They call it benefits. So what promise are you making? If you read my book, at the end of my book, this will be happening for you, or you'll get this benefit out of reading my book. As I said with Divorce Busting, the promise was obvious in the title. You're going to prevent an unnecessary divorce. With the sex-starved marriage, hopefully you're going to either understand your partner or you're going to have more sex. If, you know, it's a sex-starved marriage, it's going to have more sex in that marriage. So there's a promise inherent in some of those. Now, the promise sometimes isn't in the title, it's in the subtitle, and that leads to the last thing, which is the program or prescription that you're going to use to get them from the problem to the promise. So you might have a five-step method. That's why you see so many books with the seven steps or the five steps or seven principles or the, you know, SMART method of couples therapy, and SMART standing for S-M-A-R-T, and you just make up whatever that is. If it fits with your stuff, SMART is, you know, say the truth, and M is make sure you use empathy, and, you know, A is always listen first before you talk, and R is the relationship is bigger than each individual, and T is take time for each other in this busy world. You know, whatever. I'm just making it up. I'm saying, now that is a unique prescription or program that nobody else has. Nobody else has the SMART approach to couples therapy or resolving this kind of difficulty. So you have to somehow, it doesn't always have to be initials, it doesn't always have to be steps, but it has to be some unique slant on what are you telling people to do in order to resolve this problem that's different from everybody else. Now, that's how Harville got his, you know, Harville and Helen got their stuff out there, because the Imago approach was different from whatever other couples approaches were out there that existed at the time. And so there was a hole in the marketplace. People said, I haven't heard this approach before. So Harville had come up with this really different kind of thing. I called it a new name. It's the Imago approach rather than, you know, the active listening approach or some other kind of approach that you would use for couples, or the family of origin approach, or whatever other approach that one used to resolve couples problems. Harville had a different slant on it. He was able to sell the book on that basis. So you need to have these pieces in place. Let me just go over them again quickly, these five P's. You need to have passion, energy. You need to have a great platform, and you can work on the platform between now when we're on the phone or you're listening to this call and the time you submit your manuscript or your proposal, is how you're typically going to do it, to a publisher, to an agent. You're going to have a clearly defined problem, a really powerful promise of what people will get once they read your book, once they master the material and there use it, and then you're going to have some sort of program and prescription that's unique to you and your approach to this problem and this promise. All right? So then how you present that and how you sell the book, once you do that preliminary, you have those preliminary things taken care of, all those five P's, and got all those things in place, you're going to write a proposal. Now, when I sold that first book, all I had to do was write a chapter outline and write a cover letter. But almost always these days, there's a few exceptions, you're going to sell your book to an agent if you're going to need an agent, or to a publisher, and the agent's going to use this tool to sell it to the publisher through writing a proposal. Now, I used to really get annoyed with this proposal process once I started to have to write proposals to sell my books, and it became really, really crucial when I started selling books to the for the general public, because there's more stringent requirements for that. But it would take me about as long to write a proposal as it would to write half the book. And I used to really get annoyed about it. And I think, you know, I'd say to my agent, does it really have to be this expensive? And we would revise it and revise it and revise it and revise it and revise it. It took me months to work on the proposal. And it's harder to tell people what the book is about. Why don't I just write the book and show it to them? No, no, no. That doesn't work, because people in publishing, agents and publishers and editors, are very busy people, and they want to see a condensed version of what you're going to write before they buy it and before you write it. They do not want to have to look through your whole book. You might say, well, the whole book is where they'll get a sense of whether the book is publishable or not. Yeah, maybe so, but they will not look at a whole book. If you send them a whole book, they will send it right back and they'll throw it away, or they'll throw it away, one of the two. So you have to write a proposal. And what is a proposal? A proposal is kind of a summary of your book, or it's a sales brochure for your book. It's anywhere from, I've written ones that are 120 pages long, to from about 30 pages to 120 pages long. Try to keep it as short as possible to make the most succinct summary of the book. And there are various elements to a proposal. There's a cover page that says, here's what this is. It's a proposal for this book. It proposes that you buy this book to publish it. And it tells what genre the book is. It's nonfiction, self-help, how-to, whatever it may be. Or if it's a professional book, you say it's a book for psychotherapists. You tell them what kind of book this is right up front. You tell them that unique focus and slant that we talked about. You give them an outline for the book. You give them chapter outlines for the book. And you give them an outline summary of the book, like what is this book about and why is it unique. And you give them some writing samples, usually two or three chapters these days. I used to have to write one chapter. Now they're asking for two chapters. They really want to see that you can write and what the flavor of the book is. You should also put in that proposal why you and why this topic. And you should make a case that nobody's written this book before. There's a hole in the market, and you're the person to fill the hole in the market because of your expertise and your platform and the interesting idea that you have, the interesting slant that you have. And you also want to look at and talk about your audience, who's going to potentially buy this book. And if you have statistics about that, you say, you know, this many people go through a divorce every year, this many people, you know, have affairs every year. Whatever your statistics or studies or data that you have that backs up that there's an audience for this, you can also cite other books that are on the topic but different from yours that sold well to show that there's an interest in the bookmind public about this. And in that realm, you also need to do an analysis of what they call competitive titles. Other people that are in your ballpark, that are in sort of your area, but they've written slightly different books about the topic. Now, if you're writing a topic about how to get over an affair, there's a bunch of books about how to get over an affair. So you have to show why those books, fine as they were, don't fill the need that your book, or it doesn't have the solution that your book has in it. And you have to kind of not be snarky or mean about it, because those books succeeded, and you don't want to be, you know, putting them down, but you want to say, well, they were fine as far as they went, and here's why mine, and of course that shows there's a market for this kind of book, but here's why mine fills a need or will sell at least as well or better than those. So you're going to do a competitive title analysis, and that used to be really difficult. I used to have to go to the library and look up books in print, find some of those books and read them. Now you can go on Amazon and find a bunch of books that are somewhat similar to yours, and you can get a pretty good summary of the book sometimes, and you can get the critiques that some of the reviewers have made, some of the just everyday public or sometimes critics that have written about the book have made. So you can get a pretty good sense of it even without reading all the books, although it would be a good idea if you read your competitors' books and found out, you know, what was different about your approach or responded in a different way to the same issue. You're also going to put in that proposal your marketing channels, abilities, and plans. That's going to be a really big part. And I did not do that so much at first. And I actually, you know, as Kevin said at the very beginning, I got on Oprah for one of my books, and I was unhappy with the agent that I had at the time. And I thought, well, this is a perfect time to go out and get a new agent. I went out to five different agents, and I didn't get a new agent. Like, wow, that's really weird. I was just on Oprah. You'd think that would be really easy to get a new agent. But I'd approached the agents in the wrong way, number one, and that's a different story. I won't get into that. Number two, I wasn't emphasizing my platform. I was emphasizing the great idea I had for a book. And I changed my approach after a while, and I got a new agent in a day because I focused on making sure that the platform statement that I put in my proposal was really important, and I also put some videotape in with my proposal so people could watch me 5 minutes on Oprah, 5 minutes on the Today Show, 5 minutes on Canada AM, and some audio that I had done some interviews for the book that got on Oprah. It's called Do One Thing Different. And I put that stuff in there and some reprints of articles that had been in Newsweek or, you know, Ladies Home Journal that was on my work. And that really helped sell the book. And when I met with publishers, my agent took me on as a client, but then when I met with publishers, they said, the reason we agreed to meet with you is you have a really big platform. And they meant from that I had really good statement of my marketing channels, abilities, and plans, that they could see that I was thinking about this book stuff as a business thing, as a marketing thing, rather than just as a set of ideas. So in that proposal, you really want to present yourself professionally. Some people do tricky things with their proposals, you know, like put them on colored paper and try and stand out from the crowd. But it really should just be 12-point font, you know, a typical serif font like Times New Roman, and, you know, like a business letter. It should be on white paper with no typos, no grammatical errors, things like that. You know, it should just look really professional. That's your job, is to present your stuff professionally. So you need to do a proposal to get a professional book bought or sold and or a trade book. Now, here's where they part ways. For a trade book, almost all the time, not all the time, and I'll tell you about an exception or two, you're going to need an agent. So, you know, most people have heard about, oh, my book agent. You don't need an agent unless you're writing a book for the general public. If you're writing a book for professionals, you don't need any agent. Why don't you need an agent? Because you can approach the editors and the publishers directly. But for you, if you have a book that goes, it's trying to be sold to a major publisher, like Harville's books are, Harville has an agent. Harville and Helen have agents. They have people who represent them to the book companies and who negotiate the contracts and the money in the advance and all that stuff and the marketing. They have people that represent them. They don't go to the publishers directly. So you need an agent if you're going to try to get a book published by a major New York publisher, mostly New York publishers. And there are five major publishers these days, some of them owned by Rupert Murdoch, some of them owned by Bertelsmann, it's in Germany. But there are five major publishers with a bunch of sub-imprints within them. And the agents are almost always in New York. There's a few exceptions to that, too. And because that's where the publishing companies are, and they socialize with these people. They go out to lunch with them a lot. They go to publishing events with them. They've developed relationships. Often agents were previously in the publishing, in the middle of the publishing industry. They were agents, they were editors themselves or book publicists or, you know, executives in book publishing companies, and they know people on the inside. So mainly what they're going to do for you is they're going to kind of pre-screen all the submissions that come to them, and they're only going to give the best to the people in the publishing industry. And because they have those relationships, that they've developed a trusting relationship and they know who's who in the publishing industry, and they can get them on the phone and they can go out to lunch with them. They can get the people to look at their manuscripts. The agent is really worth their weight in gold. Usually we pay 15% of all my money that I make from my book, from all the translations, foreign editions, reprint rights, audio rights, movie rights, anything. And I'm so happy to pay them that 15% because they, and I pay that to them the rest of my natural born days and their natural born days as long as the book is in print. They get a chunk of that book, and I'm quite happy to pay it for them, two of them, because they represent me well. Not only they negotiate a better contract than I would have negotiated, but they sell the book for me, and I wouldn't have been able to sell it on my own, almost certainly. So you need an agent if you really want to go big. Again, if you know the Getting the Love You Want and all Harville and Helen's books are represented by agents, unless they're specifically targeted at therapists. If they have a workbook or something, they wouldn't do that. But their general books are targeted for the general public, and they all had agents, and the agents sold the book and got them money for an advance and then also administer the royalties and things like that. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So how do you get an agent? You have to have a kick-ass proposal with no typos or grammatical errors and, you know, again, sending that supporting platform material I talked about. You have to have a really good platform, a solid platform, or sometimes you can write on someone else's platform. If you know Harville and Helen and you can get them to write a foreword for your book or give you a blurb for your book, that'll help sell your book. They get asked that all the time, and I'm sure they don't always do it, but sometimes they do it. If you know anybody else who's famous, you could possibly get a blurb from them. If you can get a pre-written blurb before the book is done and you're trying to sell it, that will really help you get a book contract because you're writing on someone else's platform. If you can co-author with somebody who's more well-known than you are, that will help as well. So you can either develop a solid platform, which is always a good idea, start blogging, start Twittering, you know, start tweeting, get on Twitter, be on Facebook, you know, develop podcasts or, you know, whatever else you do to get on the social media and get your name out there, get on television, get on radio, start doing speaking around the world, write papers, write articles for the newspaper. Anything you can do to get your name out there and get more widely known will be really helpful in selling the book. The other thing about getting an agent is have a really unique slant. They get approached all the time with a bunch of ideas, and, you know, most of them are mundane and they're not that interesting, and they just say, yep, thanks, next, move on. They get hundreds of submissions a week, and so you have to really stand out from the crowd. You have to have a really good slant, and you have to have thought about this very carefully and not just throwing something together. It has to be a really good proposal with a really unique slant. And how you approach agents is you approach them with a query letter, and you can query a bunch of agents at the time, and I think it's a good idea to do that. Let them know you're contacting more than one agent, and wait a little while because, you know, sometimes I've contacted an agent and I've never heard from them. Sometimes I've contacted them, I've heard from them in a couple of days or a week or one day. More commonly, it's a couple of months. So query multiple agents, ask them if they want to see your proposal, and if they say yes, you've made a major breakthrough. If they are willing to look at your proposal based on your query letter saying, here's the kind of book I want to write, it's just basically a one- or two-page introduction, you haven't even sent your proposal yet. Most agents don't take a proposal until they agree to look at it because they're really busy. So you write them a letter, or if you want to call them on the phone, if you can get them on the phone or email them, some of them take email queries. You can do that, but you have to get their permission to submit the next bit, which is your platform, your proposal. And based on that proposal, they'll say yes, no, or maybe. And if they say maybe, they say, well, work on it like this and change it like this and get back to me. Or the idea isn't as focused as it could be. Focus it a little more and get back to me. So if you get any kind of encouraging response from an agent, most of the time you're going to get it's not for us, or I'm too filled, I'm not taking any more clients, or thank you for considering us, it's not right for our list, or whatever. And if you get any kind of positive response, that's great. You're doing well. And get feedback from them if you can on how to make things better if they say no. If you can't, move on and do your best to guess why it didn't get taken. If all the agents say no or they don't respond, you need to go back to the drawing board. Get a new slant, new title, work on the proposal more, work on your platform more, and then go back out. Don't get discouraged. Keep persisting. But ultimately, in order to sell a big book, you know, for the general public and get a significant advance, you're going to need an agent. Now, there are a few exceptions to this. There are some kind of hybrid publishers. One of them that many of you may know about because you get some advertisements or have seen them in a bookstore is called New Harbinger. And New Harbinger is you don't need an agent for them so much, partly because they don't give such big advances or any advances in some cases. But you can approach them directly. And if you've gotten some of those New Harbinger catalogs in the mail advertising their books, sometimes in the middle of it says, do you have an idea for a book? Send it to us in this form. Go on our website and look how to submit. So you can sometimes, and there's another one called Shambhala, which is a spiritual, more spiritually oriented press in Boston, that will take submissions from people. The people who published Chicken Soup for the Soul, that whole series, it's called HCI. They're down in Florida in Deerfield Park. They will also take unagented solicitations for, you know, manuscript solicitations, proposals. So there are a few exceptions, but if you want to go with one of the big ones, Simon & Schuster, Random House, HarperCollins, all these big New York publishers, you need an agent. They don't talk to people anymore. Again, one slight exception, if you know somebody in the middle of the publishing industry and they can get you in to see an editor, to submit directly to an editor or talk to an editor, you might be able to bypass that agent process. But if they decide they want your book, they're going to suggest to you getting an agent anyway, because the agents represent your business interests as well as selling the book. And again, agents negotiate contracts, and authors are terrible at negotiating contracts. I wouldn't be good at it. I would let too much stuff go, or I'd argue about the wrong stuff, and it's good to have an agent. So how do you do a query letter? Keep it short and sweet. One page, if you can, that just summarizes who you are and what this book project is about, and again, the stuff we've talked about. I have some more P's to give you for this. I call it the 6P method for query letter. You make it personalized. Don't say, dear agent or dear publisher. Look them up. It's easy on the Internet. Or there's books that you can go to Borders or Barnes & Noble or at the library and find lists of agents or lists of publishers or editors. And so don't send a generic thing. Send it to them and tell them why you're sending it to them, particularly because they've represented a similar kind of book or because they represent nonfiction books. If you send a nonfiction proposal to someone who specializes in novels, they're going to think you're nuts. You're wasting their time. So do your research, find some good agents, and submit it to the right agent in a personalized way. Dear, you know, Ms. So-and-so or dear Mr. So-and-so. You're going to make it very specific for that person. Position your stuff, your book in the marketplace. There's a hole in the marketplace. And here's this population that hasn't been served, or here's this approach that hasn't been written about, and my book fills that hole. So position yourself in the marketplace. So it has to be personalized, position it, make sure it's you tell them what population this is for, and tell them who you are as a person. And also, of course, put in the short platform statement, your prestige, your promotional abilities and channels, and then tell them what the project is. You should be able to do that in a page, maybe at the most 2 pages. They're busy. They don't want to see a lot because they won't read it. They'll just throw it away. If it's a tome of, you know, 20 pages that you describe your wonderful project, they're going to throw it right away. They're not even going to look at it. So short and sweet. These people are super busy, as most people are these days, but they're especially busy. They get a lot of people proposing lots of stuff. They want to be able to make a decision in 15 or 20 seconds. And so the quicker you can get to the heart of the matter, tell them what it is, that's great. Now, if you're going to sell a professional book, you don't need an agent. You do still need a proposal. You don't need quite as much platform, and you still need to query, but you can probably send your proposal at the same time. Now, my favorite of the professional psychotherapy publishers is Norton Professional Books. I've published probably 12 or 13 of my books with them, and I have a good relationship with them. Deborah Malamud is the editor-in-chief there. And you can go on the Norton website. Just search for Norton Professional Books, and they have a submission form. They tell you how to write a proposal on there and all the elements that they want. And you can email, query Deborah Malmude, and just write them and tell them what your book is about and send in a proposal. And that's a fairly straightforward thing. To me, Norton is the best of them. W.W. Norton Professional Books is the best of the professional publishers. Some other people might disagree. I've published books with Wiley Professional Press, John Wiley & Sons. I've published with Guilford. I've published with Taylor & Francis. Various ones, and to me, W.W. Norton is the top of the list. So I would start with them and then go with Plan B if they didn't say yes. And if they give you any feedback that, you know, helps you make it better, I incorporate that feedback before I submit it to the next place. Sometimes you just hit the wrong moment because they have another book that's like that, or, you know, you haven't gotten a big enough platform yet. So don't get discouraged if you get a no. You're probably going to get a few no's before you get a yes. And any of these processes, the more, you know, the more competition there is, like for the general public books, the trade books, the more no's you're probably going to get before you get a yes. But professional books, you might still get some no's. Go back to the drawing board, redo your proposal, make it better, keep working on your platform, keep working on the focus of the book, and go back to them, maybe even the same people in 6 months, and try them again, unless they've said, absolutely, we're not interested in this topic, or we have another book coming out on this same topic, and yours isn't different enough. Unless you make it different, don't go back to them. But if you make it significantly different or better, go right back to the same people, or go move on to somebody else. Now, a few other things, some don'ts. Don't hyperlie. Don't say, this is going to be a bestseller, or it's sure to be on Oprah. They've seen a lot of that stuff. They don't believe you. It just loses credibility for you. And don't lie in your proposal. Don't say you have somebody's endorsement or blurb if you don't have it. Don't say you were on this TV show if you weren't on. Don't lie. It's not good. Don't be paranoid about your idea being stolen. I've had people that I've coached to submit books or proposals, and they put copyright on their proposal. The book publishers get thousands of ideas a month. They don't want to steal your idea. You're going to have to force your idea down their throats. They don't want to steal your idea. It's very rare that professionals will steal anybody's idea. And, you know, I have people come up to me when they find out that I write books, and they go, oh, I've got a great idea for a book. Why don't I give you the idea and you write the book? Well, that's the hard part. I have more ideas on my computer than I will have time in a lifetime to write books. I'm working on my 30th book. I'm not slowing down at all. Ideas are a dime a dozen. The execution of those ideas, the writing the book, the selling the book, that's the hard part. So nobody's going to steal your idea. Maybe if it's super unique, you want to be a little careful about who you tell, but nobody in the publishing industry will do that. Almost nobody. It's very, very, very rare. And when it gets out that somebody did it, they're shunned by the other people and they're drummed out of the business. So I wouldn't worry about it. Don't write your book before you sell it. I've written 30 books. I always sell my book, almost always sell my book before I write it. Even if I've pre-written it, I don't tell the agent or the publisher that I've written it, because they get worried about that, because authors get attached to the particular form of what they've written because they don't want to go back and rewrite the whole book. But sometimes after I've sold the book or when I'm selling the book, the editor or the agent says, you know, this is a pretty good idea, but I'd like to totally rearrange it. And if you've already written the book, you'll be attached to the way it is now, and you'll be resistant to those changes. So agents and editors have learned to say no to anybody who's already written the book because they know that person's going to be difficult to work with to do any revisions, especially major revisions. So don't, even if you've written it, don't tell them you've written it. You can go ahead and write it if you want, but you may have to totally rewrite it. I sold a book a few years ago, and I had to throw out a third of the book and rewrite it based on the, you know, the discussions I had with the editor after I sold it. Don't expect the publisher to do all the marketing. You're going to have to do a good amount, maybe most of the marketing. Now, I hear people say, oh, book companies don't market anymore. Well, book company got me on Oprah. HarperCollins I sold my book to. They got me on Oprah. Book companies have sold thousands and thousands and thousands of my books. So they do some marketing, but they're going to expect you to do some marketing. And more as their budgets for publicity get cut and marketing get cut, and as they get stretched thinner and thinner, like most people do when they're trying to reduce staff, you're going to have to do some of the marketing. So don't expect them to do all of it for you. I thought I'd talk a little about financial stuff. Royalty rates are pretty standard, and most contracts are pretty standard. They're kind of boilerplate contracts. You can negotiate a bit, but basically you get 10% of the first, typically, of the first 5,000 books that you sell. And I mean 10% of the list price. It's sometimes a little different for some publishers, but say just to make it easy, it's a $20 book. You would get $2 for every book that you sold. That's what they would pay you. After you sell 5,000 books, the rate goes up to 12.5% of the list price. After you sell 10,000 books, every book after that is 15%. So by the time you get up to selling, you know, over 10,000, the 10,001st book and everything beyond that, you get $3 a book if that book was priced at $20. Sometimes you get advances. The advances vary widely. They can be from zero to hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's mostly for popular books, trade books. For psychotherapy books, it's usually zero to about $5,000 or $10,000 at the most. For trade books, it's usually 10,000 up to about 40 or 50 is pretty usual for a first book. It might be closer to that 10,000 if you don't have much of a platform and they don't think it's going to sell that much. It's usually that advance is paid in two or three pieces, when you sign the contract, when you deliver the manuscript, and when the book is published. And sometimes it's just two, when you sign the contract and when the book is published. So they'll give it to you in two chunks. The agent, if you have an agent, if it's a book that was agented, takes out 15% and sends you the rest. They send the money to the agent first because authors are notorious for not paying their bills, you know, and they're always desperate for money. The advances don't have to be paid back, even if the book doesn't sell enough to pay back its advance. And that's what an advance means. It's an advance on future earnings. So even if your book didn't sell enough to pay back all those potential future earnings that they gave you in advance, unless you mess up, that is, you don't finish the book, you don't turn it in on time, or it's not a good book when you turn it in, you don't have to pay back that advance. I have a friend who got a $400,000 advance, and her book didn't sell anywhere near that. She never had to pay that money back. Now, that's a pretty unusually large advance. I've never gotten one like that. But my advances have been anywhere from psychotherapy land, $3,000 at the very lowest, to about $8,000 at the highest. My advances for trade books have been $10,000 at the lowest and $75,000 at the highest. So you can make some significant money. On some years, I make enough money to live with my books. On some years, I don't. It depends on whether I sell a book that year. It depends on how well the book sells. Most books don't earn back their advances, and some do. Almost all of mine have earned back their advances, which is why I can keep publishing to a certain extent. But that's the financial stuff. Okay. So let me just tell you a couple of things and then throw it open for some questions, if there are questions. Maybe I've covered the topics well enough for you. I have a general site that's called getyourbookwritten.com, which has some answers to questions and some more details on some things I've just talked about. I've also, actually, if you want to go and listen to the recording afterwards, you're probably going to have to do this to get this because it's a long web address. But I have arranged for a discount on an online book writing and publishing course for just the people on this call. So it's not for anybody else, just the people who are listening to this call. And the address is bookpublishingpath.com/discount, spelled with a lowercase discount, /imago, spelled with a capital IMAGO, .html. So I'll say it again, but you'll probably have to just get the recording and listen to it. bookpublishingpath.com/discount with a small d, /imago with a capital I, .html. If you go on there, there's a really significant discount for the online book writing course that I do. If you want to know this stuff more in depth, if listening to this call has convinced you I think I can do this, or I'd like to know more. I'd like to get a little more information on how to write a proposal, how to approach an agent, how to get myself to write. All that's in those in that course, the online course. You can take it at your own rate and pace. You get up to 3 months to do it. It's all online. There's some handouts and some bonuses, things like that. So you can either go to getyourbookwritten.com, which is a general site, or I've made a very specific discount site for the people that are listening on this call. Now, you can. I'll throw the lines open, or unless Kevin has star-fived you and muted you.
I'm here. You know, I think we might have time for one question, but we're cutting it close. We have about a minute.
Close. I know. So anybody got a quick question or comment before we end? I tried to give you a whirlwind tour. Sorry, I talked fast, but I had a lot to talk about.
Hi, it's Izzy here. Thanks very much, Bill. I didn't get that Imago site.
You can listen to the recording, but it's Book Publishing Path /discount/imago.html, and discount is spelled with a small D, and Imago spelled with a big I.
And the five P's to get published?
The what?
Five P's
to get published is passion, platform. Sorry, I have to go back to it. I'm looking at my list here. Passion, platform, here we go. Problem, promise, and prescription or program. Passion, platform, problem, promise, prescription, or program.
And that's about all the time we have. I want to stop you before you get cut off, because that's a rude way to end the Think Tank.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to remind everybody that if they want to listen to Bill, he'll be on the archive probably within 24 hours, and the archive can be found at gettingtheloveyouwant.com/thinktank. Again, that's gettingtheloveyouwant.com/thinktank. And, Bill, I just wanted to thank you again for being here today.
All right, and we'll be doing something else in March on how to get yourself to write and how to write quickly in the midst of your busy life. All right? So
great.
Maybe I'll talk to some of you again. Thanks so much.
We're looking forward to that, and thank you for being here.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks again for being here.